Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Visit kintech.net. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza.
Pizza time.
Pizza time tomorrow against the Minnesota Wild for the Vancouver Canucks. That will be a 5 o'clock start, so it is not just pizza time, but it is prime time to enjoy maybe some of those $5 bevvies on a Vancouver Canucks game night. Just throwing a hint. Just a hint for a possible Tuesday activity during a Canucks game. That's all I'm doing.
That's it?
That's all.
That's it. Something small.
Yeah, something small. Big. Boston pizza and some $5 bevvies and a Canucks Wild game. Why not? All right. And if you want to be a part of the program, you can. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. The Sunday got off to a great start when the Canucks and Red Wings danced to a thriller, couple of lead changes, an overtime win for the Vancouver Canucks, and then a lot of our Canucks fan listeners, of course, went off and enjoyed the rest of their Sunday, I would assume.
Yeah, well, if you're a Seahawks fan, you watch the Seahawks also win. My Sunday started off really well, even earlier, watching Chelsea beat Aston Villa 3-0. So, I mean, I was flying high when I came in at 8 o'clock, whatever, 8:15 or whatever time. Yep. I showed up yesterday before the show, and I was just beaming, man. And then the Canucks win. I went home. I just chilled.
Had a glow about him yesterday.
It was delightful. I came home. I was home at 2 p.m. I watched the rest of the Sunday afternoon football games, watched some snow football.
The Browns weren't playing to ruin your Sunday?
No, they might ruin my Monday, but they did not ruin my Sunday.
Well, they could potentially, if they beat Bo Nix, who knows what happens for the rest of the Browns season.
If you do the math.
I'm not saying.
They have six games left. If they win out.
Okay. This sounds like a couple of years ago we did it with the Canucks. Like, well, you know, if they just win the next 12 games, surely they could make a playoff push.
They control their own destiny as long as they win every
Browns
game.
Browns need to hire Bruce Boudreau.
That might do it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to it. It's the Open on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the Open.
Oh! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The Open on Canuck Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. The Canucks coming off a dub over the Detroit Red Wings. And thanks to Jake DeBrusque, the big signing of the offseason, gets a hattie in Detroit and is now on pace at, by my grade 9 level math, he is now on pace for 35 goals this season and well on track to make good on the guarantee I made over the summer.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you called Jake DeBrusque being a 30-goal scorer, and right now he's on pace for it. 35, no less.
It's crazy how quickly that can change.
Early season's stats are hilarious because they're small samples, and they can... But, you know, like,
after the six-game homestand, it wasn't looking good. He had 0 goals during the six-game homestand, but now he's crushing it on the road, and different story.
Well, the thing is, you know, like we talked about in the beginning, it was still, he was new to the team still, trying to figure it out. And obviously, you know, you have to give somebody a little bit of time, but he's a streaky player, and guys who score 20 goals will not score in like 60 odd some games, but sometimes they get hot. Or often they get hot, and when they get hot, they look like guys that can be more, you know, bigger contributors than they have been. So I think what he's shown is he hasn't lost his scoring touch, which is very positive, right? He has the 10 goals. So the question is, can he be more consistent as the season goes on? Like, that's the big thing, right? Like, we knew he can do this. Like, you look at his stats throughout his career, October is not great, November is really good, December is really good, and then it tails off a little bit. Like, can he sustain something beyond these 2 months here and really become that 30-plus goal scorer that, you know, you had hoped he would be?
Well, prior to this recent streak for Jake DeBrusque, he had not scored a goal in which Elias Pettersson had provided the primary assist. Now, two of the last three goals that he has scored, he has had Elias Pettersson providing that primary assist, including in overtime yesterday against the Detroit Red Wings. That's something you wanted to start to see. And I think we have seen it, just because they haven't connected directly on a primary assist to a goal doesn't mean we haven't seen the chemistry starting to build between Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusk. But ultimately, this is something that the team wanted to cultivate, wanted to see how it would work. They abandoned it early, got back to it now, maybe out of necessity. And I believe we're starting to see, especially with Pettersson playing better now and controlling play a little bit more, really showing and showcasing his vision on the ice, that this is something, this duo, as the Canucks theorized when they signed Jake DeBrusk, is starting to build some chemistry, which the Canucks will definitely need during the second half of the season.
That's probably the most convincing argument, that with Elias Pettersson, them finding that chemistry, much like you saw JT Miller when he's with Brock, when he was with Bo at his best, turn guys that maybe were more high 20, 30 goal guys to 40 goal guys. You know, Horvat was on pace to get over 40. That dipped when he got to the island after the trade that year. But he was on pace to get well over 40 in Vancouver. And we know ultimately Besser got to 40. Pettersson has shown that he can be that type of playmaker, a player that is a kingmaker for wingers that are trying to hit new heights. We saw it with Kuzmenko, for instance, right? And then it just kind of tailed off. And last year in the second half, he just wasn't the same player he was. But he's looking more and more like that player recently. And even I thought yesterday afternoon, I thought he had a fantastic game. Like, he was really driving play. He was creating chances. He was really on top of everything the way, you know, you want to see him be. I can still stand to see him shoot more, like we talked about. There's still more layers to his game and levels that he can attain or reach. So I think that's kind of something that is still a work in progress. But he's looking a lot more like a star-level player again. And when he's playing better and Jake DeBrusk is gaining some confidence, can this really take him to that next step? That's what you're hoping for, right? Because like we talked about, when they signed DeBrusk, he wasn't very high on my list. Mm-hmm. You know, I have more skepticism about how it's going to work out. I have no doubts he's going to be a 20-goal scorer. My doubts have always been, for somebody you made a 7-year bet on, can he be a core contributor more than just, you know, a second line player? And I know, you know, the cap hit's not onerous, but still 7-year commitment. And, you know, you need to find surplus value. And the point that you were making is he can be Hyman like in sense of you're signing him for cheaper. And then if he takes a step and becomes a 30 goal guy, well, now you're getting a player worth $7-8 million at the very least. And that's kind of what you're hoping for. And those are the types of moves that help you take the next step as a team. And if you can't go out and get a Jake Guentzel, which the Canucks at least were interested in doing, then you have to find other ways to, you know, unearth difference-making players. And DeBrusk came here not just because, you know, they feel good about him scoring 20 goals or whatever. It's, can he take that step? And that's still something that you know, we have to give some time to see how it would unfold. But the most compelling argument for that is chemistry with Pettersson. And they're certainly looking like two players right now that are making a pretty good duo.
The majority of his goals coming in and around the blue paint. But, you know, we saw the overtime goal yesterday, just an elite shot that if he's able to get that off a little bit more, maybe we do see Jake DeBrusk hit another level. You know, he's up to close to almost 7 shots per 60 at 5-on-5. So he's among the leaders on the Vancouver Canucks. That's good to see from Jake DeBrusk. You want to see this continue. As far as Pettersson goes, I mean, look, Quinn Hughes, second star of the week, right? He's elevating this team. He gives them a baseline when he's on the ice that, you know, allows them to be where they're at, even though the whole of it all still isn't the prettiest picture given some of the absences the Canucks have had to deal with. But for as much praise as has gone there, 6 games now without JT Miller in the lineup, sat Elias Pettersson, 1 goal, 9 assists, 10 points. 8 of those have come at even strength, and he's averaging 20 minutes a night. Pettersson needs to score a little bit more. You know, you'd love to see the goals tick up for Elias Pettersson. But other than that, you're kind of seeing everything you want out of Pettersson. Throw the first period out against Detroit yesterday. I mean, I don't think the Canucks as a team were very good in the first period yesterday, mm-hmm. as they took a while to find their legs at Little Caesars Arena. But through the second half of the game, through the final 40 minutes, ends up with three primary assists. I mean, Pettersson, he has... The club needed him to elevate his game. They've needed a few guys to elevate their game. But Pettersson has definitely elevated his game with JT Miller being out of the lineup.
He has. And I see a lot of people wondering, hey, is it because JT's not there? I think that also doesn't acknowledge that Pettersson was getting better before mm-hmm. JT left the lineup. And there was a game against Calgary where we talked about how for the first time all season, Elias Pettersson and JT Miller both had a good game. And it was like, we haven't seen that before. And then the next game, Pettersson played well, but JT didn't. And then it's like, okay, you're kind of back to, you know, you don't have both guys going. And then not too long afterwards, we saw JT Miller kind of leave the team and go on the personal leave. But I do think now that there is more, I'd say, expected from him, more being asked from him, and him being put in a position of greater importance, I think it's bringing the best out of him. I do believe that as a player, like I think Pettersson's the type of guy that wants to feel like he's a huge part of the team.
Yeah.
And whether he felt that or not, I can't say before, but I do know that now, no matter how you cut it, he's a massive, massive part of the team, and they have to rely on him in a big way. And I do think being that gets the best out of him.
And you're just seeing the game slow down for him a little bit, and he's making great decisions on the ice. You see it on the tying goal to Brännström, how he provides that assist. A lot of good signs coming out of Elias Pettersson, but would still like to see the goal scoring tick up a little bit. Andrew and Langley listening live with this text. When Miller returns, would you keep DeBrusque and Besser with Pettersson, or would you move Besser back with JT to balance out the scoring? Ultimately, Sat, this is, you want to have a couple of duos in your lineup. I think they want to see DeBrusque and Pettersson remain a duo and then have Miller and Brock be a duo and that be how they construct their top six forward group.
Well, and honestly, I'm not sure, again, long term, that DeBrusque might be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think right now, like, that's how the team is built. I think Besser has to play with Pettersson, I think, for the time being until JT comes back. But Besser and JT are the duo.
Yeah.
And if JT and Besser, I mean, if Besser signs long term, that's who he's going to be playing with the vast majority of the time.
That's who you want that's how I want to see
it.
Yeah. Like, so, Miller and Besser have been unbelievable for this team the last couple of years.
Exactly. So you feel pretty good about that, right? And then the other duo, and this is a bit more unconventional because they're two wingers, is Joshua and Garland.
Yeah.
Now, with Joshua, we've yet to see the best from him, right? We haven't seen his game get to the level it needs to be yet, and that's all to be expected. It's going to take time, but that's kind of what you're hoping, that when everything falls into place for this team, if they can get Joshua up to speed, you get JT back, and Pettersson and DeBrusque can be a duo, now we start seeing the real ceiling of this team, because we've only seen, you know, spurts of Besser and JT being dominant. Now we're finally seeing some things happen with Pettersson and DeBrusque, and we get to see Garland and Joshua. So when we look at this team, and, you know, despite the fact they have the points they have so far, people feel unconvinced with what they've seen, because we haven't seen the best version of them. And just talking about the whole duo thing, we haven't seen the three duos really get going at the same time yet.
And we need to see that at some point. Like, you're going to need to see that develop over the next couple of months. You hope Miller is back maybe by the end of this week, right? Does feel like, or there have been reports, Rick Dhaliwal has said he expects to see Miller back by, you know, Friday's game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. We'll see how that plays out. But it's hard to get a gauge of where this team's ceiling is with the way that they've started. And even still, like, getting results in some of the ways that they have, you know, a couple of overtime wins here, didn't play well in Pittsburgh. Yes, they're still winning on the road, but they're winning by the skin of their teeth. And I'm not judging them, because I think you are in a bit of survival mode with everything that's happened and all the players that you're missing. So you do what you have to do. And I'm not sitting here and expecting the Canucks to drive play to really dominate the shot clock on a night-to-night basis with the roster that they currently have available to them. But they're finding ways to win. And that is admirable, because they've put themselves in a good position through the second half of the season with where they're at right now. They've had some other guys jumping up and really providing as well. And Pugh Suter having a contract year. I don't know if we had this on our bingo card that Pugh Suter was going to be having this kind of a contract year, but already up to 9 goals on the season. Scores again yesterday against his former club, the Detroit Red Wings. And, I mean, where... Pugh Suter, hey, can you play first line left wing for us in the playoffs? Sure, yeah, I can do that. Let me fill in that hole for you. Hey, Puse, can you play second line center for us here while JT Miller is out of the lineup? Yeah, sure, I can do that. No problem. What else do you want me to do, coach? He's just like, we've said this before, he's the Swiss Army knife because he's Swiss, right? And he can do anything that seemingly Rick Tocchet asks him to do. And yeah, the goals are great, but not only does he get put into different roles all around the lineup, but he also seems to excel in any of those roles that he gets put in by the head coach.
He does. And I think what he's really shown is that right now with JT out, he's cameoed as a second line center. He's not a long-term second line center,
no.
Right? And even long-term third line, there are certain things about his game, but the fact that he can give you 5, 10, 15 games, the fact that he gave you at least one big performance in the playoffs where he helped you win a game and that he has that in his arsenal and give you the versatility, these are integral parts of a roster. And I think when you lose players like this over time, you really feel their absence, right? Because you have to find a way to patch your way through 82 games. And you need to be healthy in the playoffs, right? You need to have the depth, of course. But you need to have players that find ways to contribute and help you float when things aren't going the way they need to be going. And Pugh Suter's been that type of player. And whether you want to call him an unsung hero, underrated, a Swiss Army knife or whatever, I think he's really becoming, outside of the core pieces, where does he rank as far as importance? Because right now, you'd view Lankinen the way he's played as a core piece. You know, him and Demko, when Demko comes back, you know, you start figuring that out maybe, you know, over some time. And if Demko can keep it up and if Lankinen can keep it up. But he's played like that type of player, right? But outside of the non-core players, who's been more valuable than Pugh Suter?
It's hard to find anybody that's been as valuable as him. He and... to a lesser extent, Brännström have really come in and provided huge value to the Canucks early on in this season. And Suter, question here on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. What's Suter's cap hit? He's at $1.6 million for the remainder of this year. But with the way that he is playing, he certainly is expecting a little bit of a raise on that, I think a few Canucks will be looking at a raise, including Kevin Lankinen. I know that's been a popular question of late, what his next contract could look like. But he's played his way potentially into playing games for Finland at the Four Nations Face-Off and is having a top 10 goalie season so far through much of the first half of the year. So, yeah, you got a couple of guys having contract years, and that's going to be interesting off-season conversation, but right now you just take what you can out of this Pugh Suter contract, which 2 years, $1.6 million per, it's been a home run for this front office.
Well, it really has. And also when you factor in how much a guy like Nils Höglander struggled.
Yeah.
You know, he's the guy who got the extension, right? And Pugh Suter's the guy who has 9 goals right now on the campaign.
Yeah. Nils Höglander does not have 9 goals.
No,
he's down at 2 and is barely getting any lineup any time.
Well, and the Höglander stuff, which I guess we can get to, like with all the trade rumors out there now.
So, okay, I heard Elliot Friedman say that Höglander's extension might make him more intriguing to teams on the trade market. Can you see that argument?
I mean, I can see the argument if you really believe in the player and you think that him coming over and he's going to flourish in your system and you have him signed for $3 million, I could see that, right? If you're not as convinced, it all depends on who the team that has interest in him is, right? Like if you're somebody who truly believes in him and given the level of interest from a team like Pittsburgh, like was mentioned, and even the Blue Jackets, then if you are that team, you might look at it as a bigger opportunity. And I think that does fit Dubas's MO, right? Like he's always looking for that surplus value and finding those little bets that he feels like can fit and take a step. He did that with Bunting, for instance, and you saw him get him back again.
Yeah.
And you know, we joked about this over the years that two players whose analytics are fantastic, but don't have great didn't have the value around the lead that you would hope based on the numbers were Connor Garland and Nils Höglander. Two teams that you would look at or two GMs you would look at were Kyle Dubas, the Devils because they're super analytically inclined, and also the Carolina Hurricanes. Like those would be the teams that may see more value in those players than other organizations would. So I'm not surprised that Dubas may see a lot of value in Nils Höglander and thinks it might be a bargain if he flourishes in that environment.
Well, and he just acquired another player similar to that, just with less of an NHL track record, in Phil Tomasino from the Nashville Predators. The teams that have been listed, the Penguins, the Capitals by Kevin Weeks, and the Blue Jackets. Their AGM was watching the Canucks and Red Wings yesterday. We're actually going to have Don Waddell on tomorrow with the show, GM of the Columbus Blue Jackets. So don't know if we can ask him directly about Nils Höglander, but we'll have Don Waddell on the show.
What do you think of sub 5'10 forwards that were drafted in?
What do you think of this number 21 on the Vancouver Canucks playing left wing, sometimes not too many minutes? We'll try to find a way around. But Don Waddell is going to join us. And I think any time a player gets as little ice time as Höglander's getting, the Canucks are a team certainly looking for value on the trade market, trying to find ways to improve their defense. You know, is it possible that they may have had a chat with some of these teams and Nils Höglander's name came up for, hey, what do you want for Marcus Pedersen? Or, hey, what do you want for David Yurecek? Or, you know, like, you know, these are two names specifically with the Penguins and Blue Jackets that we know the Canucks have in some capacity. We don't know how deep. Mm-hmm. They've had some trade discussions, even if it were for players that the Canucks may have been trying to acquire rather than, you know, those teams calling the Canucks for a certain player.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's one of those things where that the Canucks are always willing to take a phone call. They're always willing to talk to teams about players. And when I just think about Höglander, and I'm looking at the teams, and I really was looking at Columbus last night too, because there was a lot of buzz over the weekend about the Blue Jackets. I know there was some reporting about them watching, and yesterday too, mm-hmm. there were scouts at the game from the Blue Jackets when the Canucks played the Wings in Detroit. So I was kind of just doing some more due diligence on the Blue Jackets and you know what they might be willing to part with. And I just go through the roster and I have a hard time seeing the fit necessarily, because part of me is intrigued by Cole Sillinger, and I know his name came up. He hasn't really flourished the way they had hoped after his rookie season, but he's playing like 18 minutes a game for them this year. Now, they are going to have to make some decisions because Kent Johnson's come back and been red hot for them.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're going to trade him now that he's, you know, maybe showing that he's figuring it out, right? Voronkov's been good. Shinnikov's been good. All these guys are finding ways to be productive. Marchenko's been good. They're all productive. Now, it's small samples. It can change, obviously. But at the moment, all those players are outproducing what Höglander is doing. They have better contracts than Höglander does. So I don't see the swap there.
Yeah.
Sillinger would be the one, because he's getting paid a little bit, not too much, not crazy, but do they feel like he's part of their solution or not? And how intrigued are you by a Sillinger-Höglander swap? Like, to me, that's not necessarily making you better. You're getting a center, right? Yeah. And I like Sillinger a lot, and I'm not against making those types of swaps, but it's not going to be the type of swap you're making, and it's like, okay, all of a sudden this roster is significantly better. But I do think Cole Sillinger does have legitimate potential to be a third-line center, like legitimate potential to be a third-line center. And if you get a player like that, we just spoke about Pugh Suter.
Yeah.
Well, now internally you have him and perhaps a guy like Atu Ratu giving you a bit more depth down the middle long term.
The rental pieces the Blue Jackets would have on their roster: Dante Fabbro, who's off to a really good start since getting claimed off waivers, and Ivan Provorov, who's playing on their second pair alongside Damon Severson right now. And also something to keep in mind here, you know, the Blue Jackets are above 500 at this point in the season.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, the whole Severson thing, I know Dollywall mentioned, and we'll talk to Donnie coming up in a bit, that he, you know, or I don't know if it was him or Elliot, I forget, but somebody mentioned, I'm not quite sure, about Severson being the guy that's coming back. And I could see that. There's a big contract and it's not that simple. Although, you know, he's a player that, you know, we've talked about as perhaps being available at some point. It's just, you know, you look through and it's like, do you want Jordan Harris, a left-handed defenseman, for instance, prospect-wise? So I'm not sure the Blue Jackets have the best alignment as far as trades, considering what they'd be willing to part with. And they don't have a ton of picks either. Like, they have the two first and got the second, but if you go through, they don't have a second the next 2 years.
Canucks Central roundup. Here's a couple of things you need to know. Hughes named second star of the week, 1 goal, 8 assists, while leading the Canucks to a 3-1 record over the week. So the captain getting some love. It was Vancouver's very own Macklin Celebrini that ended up being first star of the week in the National Hockey League. I'd say he looks pretty good. He's definitely going to be in the Calder conversation. No real qualms. I'll get on that one, I'm sure. Andy Strickland reporting that JT Miller will be available to Team USA for the Four Nations faceoff. So despite Miller's absence right now, still a feeling he will be named to the U.S. team on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding on this has always been that as long as JT wants to play, he'll be on that team.
Yeah. And so we'll see how that develops over the course of the week. And maybe we could see JT Miller back with the Canucks later this week when they return home from the road trip. All right, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up. We've got Don Taylor joining us, and this is a really cool thing that we've got going on here at Sportsnet 650 with Barnside Brewing. They've dropped the gloves on a new pale ale that's perfect for hockey season, the brand new 5 for Fighting Hazy Pale. This crisp and refreshing Hazy Pale Ale is a celebration of flavor and balance. Brewed with our own farm-grown hops, it boasts a delightful harmony of fruity and floral notes. Each sip hints at the juicy essence of ripe peach, complemented by a soft, velvety mouthfeel that keeps you coming back for more. 4 packs will be available starting December 9th at Barnside Brewing Tap Room, participating retail locations, or on tap at your local pub. Visit Barnside Brewing. Get your hands on this, the 5 for Fighting Hazy Pale Ale, with us here at Sportsnet 650. Don Taylor next on Canuck Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Dranz. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.